You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We're looking ahead, but not getting too far ahead of ourselves as we open up the mailbag and answer your questions. Welcome into the Locked On Bears podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Cox, and I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today is Friday, which means we're turning the podcast over to you, playing your voicemails and reading your texts and email questions to the podcast to help drive what we're going to talk about today. And the listeners have spoken, and we're looking ahead a little bit to some potential quarterback options, the future of the offensive line a little bit, and the future of the Bears offense in the context of the rest of the NFL. Let's start with a text that we got from another 312 area code, but we don't have a name on it, but we do know it's from Chicago, and I think it's an interesting jumping off point here. The text says, if Kyle Long has played his last down with the Bears, what do you think the future looks like at right guard after the season? Do you think they'll bring in a veteran to take his place or groom Coward or Bars to take over in 2020? Thanks for the question. I think the Bears have some competing dynamics at play in the short term when it comes to the offensive line because, first and foremost, they do want to field the best possible offensive line at the moment to help them win games, and that includes then the best possible right guard to give them the most chance to get the running game going, to give whoever is under center more time to throw in the pocket, and just eliminate some of these self-inflicted wounds that seem to be regularly offensive line based. And so I think for now, Ted Larson is the offensive lineman, or at least the right guard, that gives you the best chance to win at that position. He has obviously the most of a track record behind him and has shown some consistency throughout his NFL career. He's not a lockdown, bona fide starting guard in the NFL. There's a reason he was available as a backup, a fairly cheap veteran backup with some versatility. But I do think he can step in and hold down the fort pretty well. But he is 32 years old. He is not the future of the offensive line, and he's not a guy that you necessarily, in an ideal world, want to have to rely on long-term in the starting lineup, but he can certainly hold it down for a half a season like this if you need him to. But I think from the other perspective for the Bears is they also want to see what Rashad Coward can do at right guard and see if he's a good fit at that position versus offensive tackle, for example, as he continues to try and develop in his transition from defensive line to offensive line. But they also want to see Alex Bars and how the rookie from Notre Dame can continue to show his development and pick up where Harry Hiestand had left off with him at Notre Dame before he left a year ago. So the Bears have some incentive to want to see their younger options on the offensive line fill in at right guard. But I do think so long as Ted Larson is healthy and playing at the level that we can expect from him, he should be the right guard option. But as you look ahead to the offseason, actually, all three of those guards are set to be free agents. Ted Larson will be an unrestricted free agent. Rashad Coward will be a restricted free agent. And Alex Bars will be an exclusive rights free agent, which all have different dynamics. But you would expect that Ted Larson isn't going to be brought back as a surefire starter. He's going to get another similar contract wherever he ends up signing this offseason as he approaches his age 33 season. But Alex Bars and Rashad Coward are both limited in their options, and I would expect both of them to return to Chicago next season on more cheap deals, kind of picking up where they are now, around veteran minimum salary, kind of about where they sit. So I would expect both Bars and Coward to be back. And the question becomes, who gets the shot at right guard, and will the team look for other options there to upgrade? And I have to think they want to see what Rashad Coward can do in particular this season, because Harry Hiestand should have a pretty good sense of Alex Barrs. He coached him for 3 years at Notre Dame, left before his final season to join the Bears, of course. But he knows Alex Barrs through and through. He knows what Barrs is capable of. And I think that's why you've seen Barrs on the practice squad all season, because I think Heistad knows Barrs is a quality offensive lineman that they can keep in their plans for the future, at least as a backup, if not with starter potential, whereas Coward is the guy that they're not exactly sure how good he can be and what he is capable of at this point. So I wouldn't expect that we'll see Alex Barrs before Rashad Coward until they get a better sense of what Coward can do, because you know, it would be, in an ideal world, you wouldn't go into the offseason completely unknown exactly if you can rely on Coward. And so I would expect Barrs to kind of continue to be toward the bottom of the totem pole until Kyle Long moves on and the team moves on from him this offseason. And then next year, I'm guessing it's going to be Barrs versus Coward. Winner gets the starting job. And at this point, Alex Barrs has to be the favorite there. And speaking of favorites, the Chicago Bears are 3.5-point favorites over the New Orleans Saints this week on mybookie.ag. And the point total for this game is again projected as the lowest scoring game of the weekend with just 38 points. No other game actually on mybookie has an over-under under a total of 40. So there's plenty of opportunities to bet and win big this weekend at mybookie. Between football season, the MLB playoffs, and even the start of the NBA and NHL seasons, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action. Where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why MyBookie is the place to go. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Locked On to double your cash at mybookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Another week of mailbag submissions brings more quarterback questions, and you ask them, we'll talk about them.
Hey, Lauren, this is Chad from Nashville calling. Had a quarterback question for you. What do you think about going after Marcus Mariota from the Tennessee Titans in the offseason, or maybe even trade sooner? He has been pretty inconsistent with the Titans, but he does have a connection with Mark Helfrich, and he's never had an offensive-minded coach the way that Matt Nagy runs his team. So I thought it might give him a chance at a second life and be some good competition with Trubisky, and he's probably one of the few quarterbacks that's faster than Trubisky in terms of being a mobile quarterback. So anyway, thanks. Looking forward to your answer. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Chad. And Marcus Mariota has been a popular name to associate with the Chicago Bears for the Helfrich connection in particular. And I think just to start, I don't think a trade for Mariota during the season is realistic at all, purely because of the salary involved. That the Tennessee Titans did exercise Marcus Mariota's fifth-year option for this season, so he has a fully guaranteed $20.9 million on the salary cap, and I don't know how well the Bears would be able to offset that in a trade at this point, and they certainly don't have the salary cap to the space to absorb much of that during the season. And plus, I don't think the Bears are going to make any quarterback trades during the season as is, but especially financially, Marcus Mariota is a difficult one there. So I would think that any discussion of Mariota would have to be based in the offseason when he becomes a free agent. And at that point, he's a name that I'm at least keeping an eye on, right? At this point, I don't know that I can expect. It's way too early to expect a full-on quarterback transition to the offseason. They're going to give Mitchell Trubisky every opportunity to be successful this season and probably all of next season before big decisions start getting made. But I do think Mariota is a guy who maybe the perception on him is slightly worse than the performance that I've seen on the field. I mean, he's not been a great quarterback by any stretch of the word, but I don't think he's been horrible. He's not been as terrible as I think some people think, especially you look at some of the box scores and you see a completion percentage that's been sub 60 over the course of the season. His yards per attempt haven't been phenomenal either, but he has taken care of the ball in terms of not turning it over. A 7-2 touchdown to interception ratio at this point. And he's been sacked 25 times in six games. He had a 9-sack game against the Jaguars and other games of 5, 4, 4, and 3. So he has had a lot of sacks. A lot of them can be pinned on him holding onto the ball too long, which is a flaw and something he needs to improve on. And certainly, you know, it's part of the baggage. There's a lot of baggage with Marcus Mariota here. But he's also had a lot of drop passes, and I'm not trying to make excuses for everything that he's done wrong, but I just think he hasn't necessarily been in the most successful situation for a quarterback. And I do think part of his benching was for them to see how much better Ryan Tannehill can be, rather than trying to blame all of their problems per se on Marcus Mariota. So I think there's something there with Mariota that still leaves you intrigued to bring him into Chicago and see, you know, you put him with a strong defense and maybe a better offense around him if he could, you know, be a better quarterback. And I don't think he would come in and start playing like a number two overall selection and start really just dominating. But I think there could be some consistency there that perhaps we haven't seen recently from Mitchell Trubisky or Chase Daniel. So I get the allure for Marcus Mariota, and I wouldn't totally rule it out depending on what his financial situation is in terms of what kind of contract he's going to get on the open market and what other quarterback needy teams there are out there, because the Bears could sign him as a little bit more of an expensive backup, that you're not signing him to be your guaranteed starter, but at least, you know, you have him in the building and he can kind of reacclimate to this offense and see what you can get out of him down the line. That's about as far as I'm comfortable going with Mariota at this point, but it's way too early to make any offseason quarterback decisions yet before we see the rest of this year from Mitchell Trubisky. That brings us to another text we got in. Joe from Chicago says, "Hey Lauren, love the podcast. Strictly hypothetical, if Pace traded for Cam Newton, would he work in Nagy's system? I still have faith in Trubisky, just curious." I appreciate the text, Joe, and I think Newton falls into a similar bucket right now as Marcus Mariota in terms of the financials being a very big hurdle in any kind of deal there. That Cam Newton's five-year, $100 million, whatever, contract that he's on, his current cap hit for 2019 is $23.2 million, and he's set to cost $21.1 million next season. So I know they can work some offset cash in a trade where the Panthers would agree to pay a certain percentage of it. But again, the Bears don't have a ton of money right now to absorb a significant quarterback contract. Plus, Cam Newton is injured, and I don't think that the Carolina Panthers are particularly looking to get rid of him. Even though Kyle Allen is playing well, they are still Cam Newton is still a leader on that football team, and I think a lot of that talk is more external than internal when you're talking about the Carolina Panthers. So between salary and injury, I think close to, if not exactly 0% chance of any Cam Newton acquisition to the Bears. But in terms of a fit in Matt Nagy's offense, I think Matt Nagy would be wise to adapt an offense to a quarterback like Cam Newton to be a little bit more vertical. Whereas I think Nagy has been a little bit less vertical with Trubisky and Daniel because I think he sees that as right now a little bit more suited to what he wants to do with these quarterbacks, whereas you see Andy Reid running a similar offense in Kansas City with a lot more vertical options for Patrick Mahomes. And so I think Matt Nagy could adapt what he wants to do to a quarterback like Cam Newton or any, you know, strong-armed vertical quarterback. And I think there would be some frustration at times, as Panthers fans have experienced. It's sort of similar, not to make a direct comparison to Jay Cutler, but in the idea that when you take those big shots downfield, there's a lot of boom or bust in that, and there's some turnovers in that, but there's also some big plays in that. And there could be some big opportunities to guys like Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel downfield, but some more turnovers perhaps in there as well. So no, Cam Newton not happening, but I do think Matt Nagy could certainly make it work in his offense, the way it works for Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. That doesn't mean the Bears will be completely silent at the trade deadline this year, though. And up next, we'll look at some potential names from other teams that you could either keep an eye on or at least fantasize about on your Madden franchise. Keep it locked right here on Locked On Bears. The NFL trade deadline is still a couple weeks away, but that hasn't stopped teams from trading, what, Marcus Peters and Jalen Ramsey and all sorts of trades already starting to come through the pipeline. So it's not too early to look at some other options for the Chicago Bears.
Hey, Lauren, this is Joey from Chicago. Feeling good about
the Bears kind of coming out of their bye week and cautiously optimistic for how they'll perform against the Saints. Had a question for you regarding kind of with the trade deadline approaching. Do you see any potential targets out there on another team that maybe someone the Bears might want to consider going after if it made sense? The one that kind of comes to mind for me would be someone like O.J. Howard. You know, the tight end production for the Bears has been pretty lackluster, to say the least, so far. So wondering if someone like O.J. Howard or if there's another tight end that might be up for consideration out on the trade market that could help us. If not, is there another player position that you think the Bears could go after? Just curious for your insight, and, of course, bear down.
Good question, Joey, and I think you're on the right track with a guy like O.J. Howard, who's a really, I think, arguably the most popular name, or one of them, I guess, in terms of the rumors circling around at the trade deadline here. He was a first-round pick by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a couple years ago, a very highly beloved prospect out of Alabama that I still think can be an excellent NFL player. He's had some injury issues towards the end and kind of ending some of his first two seasons here, which has been part of the problem, but also just hasn't seemed to have been quite properly utilized in Tampa Bay's offense, and he's still 24 and still an extremely talented player, which is going to leave him with a slightly higher price tag in terms of trade compensation, and especially because a lot of teams around the NFL are rumored or speculated to be potentially interested in him. And other teams besides the Bears do have some tight end needs, including, you know, the Green Bay Packers and Seattle Seahawks and some other contenders. So the Buccaneers may be able to get a pretty significant compensation for Howard if they were to trade him, though it sounds like the reports are that they're not super interested in trading him unless the price was really something intriguing, which, again, may price him out of the Bears' opportunities. But I do think tight end is a position to look at from trade standpoint. Yes, they have some money invested in Trey Burton and, of course, a draft pick in Adam Shaheen, but it's still one of the least productive areas of this Bears' offense at a position where Matt Nagy would like to have some more productivity. So there are other options besides O.J. Howard. I think Howard would be the ideal addition there as a guy to help you right now and help you in the future. But you look around, how about a guy like Tyler Eifert from the Cincinnati Bengals? Obviously a significant injury baggage with him, and not a guy who's been able to play a ton of games in recent seasons. But when healthy, he can be a very productive tight end in the NFL. The Bengals obviously not doing so hot with an 0-6 start and might be looking to shed some of their talent and some of their salary. And he's a guy who's still coming on a pretty cheap deal given all of that injury history behind him. It wouldn't be the kind of thing that you're expecting Eifert to necessarily lock down your tight end position forever, but sort of a mid-season addition who could step into the rotation. Wouldn't have to play a whole starter's worth of snaps. He's only making like $4 million this season, and it's just a one-year deal, so you're not locked into anything long-term. So, you know, you're not going to have to give up a ton to get him either. So that's an interesting option with him. Or if you're looking for something a little bit more long-term, how about another former Bengals tight end who's now with the Buffalo Bills, Tyler Kroft, who they signed this offseason as a free agent. He was injured to start the season and hasn't played a game for them yet, but is likely to return this Sunday. But while he's been gone, the Bills have found tight end production elsewhere, and they're kind of at a point now where they don't necessarily need him. Their rookie Dawson Knox has played really well, and Lee Smith has been a solid number two for them, and maybe they would be looking to potentially get out of Tyler Kroft's contract and just roll with the young, cheap guy that they have there. So there's an option there. There's some different tight end pieces there. But a lot of what we're looking at outside of the Bills is just, you know, trying to dumpster dive from some bad teams that might be looking to sort of cut ship and go into rebuild mode. So, you know, a couple other guys, stick with the Cincinnati Bengals, offensive lineman Billy Price. He was their first round pick last year out of Ohio State, can play some guard, can play some center, and really kind of fell off the map quickly and has since been benched. But if you're looking for a guy to step in and potentially compete to start at right guard and be a potential long-term option on the interior, a young, potentially still ascending offensive lineman with some talent that Harry Hiestand could get out, Billy Price would definitely be a potential low-risk, high-reward offensive line option. And a couple of veterans. How about pass rusher Ryan Kerrigan from Washington, or even defensive lineman Derek Wolfe from the Broncos? They're both expensive, and that would be a big challenge in terms of fitting them in the salary cap and trying to offset some of the salary there. But if you wanted to add one more defensive piece to really put this team and that side of the ball even more over the top and carry this team even farther. And a couple of those guys could be kind of cheap salary sheds for those other teams to come to Chicago and add even a little bit more juice to an already juiced defense. Let's wrap up with the offense, though, and go to a voicemail from a regular call-in for these Friday Mailbag podcasts.
How's it going, Lauren? Darius from Dallas, man. I've just been kind of looking at everything else that's been going on in the league, and I think there's just something to say about all these, like, trendy-style offenses. You know, like what you have with the Chiefs, I guess the Eagles to some extent. Look at what's happening with the Rams. Baltimore's offense, you know, tends to struggle at times with the trickery they try to do with Lamar Jackson. They barely beat the Bengals the other day. And I'm just wondering, man, if people really realize that you can't change the fundamentals of football, okay? You can do your jet sweeps and all that type of crap, but at the end of the day, you got to run the ball, okay? And off of that, you can get play-action pass, and passes can open up down the field. There's no other way to do it. We need to stop trying to look for other ways to do it and just look at how the Raiders beat us as a perfect example of how you play football. Okay, we need to be lining up in more jumbo sets, just like the Raiders did, you know. And if Kyle Long was really the only hindrance in our offensive line, okay, then we'll find out Sunday. But I love the fact that they just lined up, you know, the whole team on the line and said, hey, look, we're just going to beat you one-on-one and just run it with Montgomery. And off of that, they had their play-action passes, their out routes. The stuff opened up down the field because they established the run first. Okay. And I just really think that maybe Nagy is not the right guy for that. I mean, I know people don't really want to talk about that right now. Because we brought him here to, you know, bring this great show on turf type offense, but I don't think that that's going to happen, man. I think we're going to end up being disappointed with Matt Nagy. Just simply due to the fact that he's just trying to do way too much. And look at all the offenses around the league. Look at what's happening with the Chiefs. You got to have a great defense, which we have. And then after that, you just got to do clock control, man. That's really all you have to do. And if these guys can't figure out how to do that, and we go and we lose to the Saints, I think it's time to really get serious about, you know, considering that we might have chosen the wrong coach. Thanks, man.
It's not a mailbag podcast without a voicemail from Darius from Dallas, so I appreciate you calling in as always. But I have to disagree with you here on offense in general, because all those teams you mentioned, they have had their ups and downs. They haven't been perfect every single game, but they are some of the highest scoring and most effective offenses in the NFL this season. The Ravens second in the NFL in points. The Chiefs are fifth. The Eagles have had a little bit more back and forth. They're down at ninth, and the Eagles have some more question marks in my mind about how good they are as a team, but I don't know that any of those question marks for me for any of the teams come down to the offensive scheme and the offensive talent. And you might be surprised to know that the Ravens are actually the top rushing team in the NFL. They have the second most rushing attempts, the most rushing yards, third most rushing touchdowns, and lead the league in yards per attempt, whereas their passing hasn't been quite as effective. And Lamar Jackson has been a big reason for that run success, but Mark Ingram has been playing very well. They've got Gus Edwards and Justice Hill in the rotation with them as well. The Chiefs haven't quite been able to run the ball all that successfully, but when you have Patrick Mahomes throwing 14 touchdowns and one interception, that hasn't been, you know, the lack of a running game hasn't been reason for their failures or their shortcomings, because failure might even be too strong of a word there. But I think it's a misconception that these offenses are doing very much that's totally brand new and innovative in terms of football. They're not loading up the box and playing heavy personnel and ground and pound and running necessarily, but they're not doing drastically different things from the other. They're making it look different, but they're not calling brand new plays or running brand new route concepts. It's a lot of things that have been in the NFL for a long time and have been effective in the NFL for a long time, but being able to, you know, leverage elite quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes and the dynamic skill set of Lamar Jackson on top of some of these passing concepts that have been around, and then you throw on different looks from the offense and spreading things out and being able to confuse defenses in more ways, that a lot of it isn't new plays, but it's new ways to make it look different and to put different dressing on it. And yeah, there's some jet sweeps at times, and there's different end arounds and trickeration type plays, but it largely represents a very low percentage of the total offensive play calls. And it's a lot of, you know, it's some West Coast concepts, some air raid concepts, some of the different things that the Patriots do in there as well. And I don't know that it's fundamentally different football, other than the sense that some of these teams aren't running the ball as much. You know, the Chiefs in particular are a team that don't run the ball a ton and haven't needed to. And there's no statistical evidence to suggest that you need to run the ball to run play action. And play action has been very effective without running the ball, even for the Kansas City Chiefs in particular, who just, you know, don't even have 500 yards rushing on the season, and they can still play action teams and teams bite on it, and Patrick Mahomes thrives on it. So I think you kind of look at each offense individually, and like the Rams, Jared Goff isn't as good as we may have thought he was, and I have my doubts about him long-term anyway, but it's still a lot of effective offensive football, and between the Chiefs and the Eagles, it's the same system that the Chicago Bears are running. So I don't know that it's the style of play calls and the exact things the offense is trying to do that's the problem when these offenses struggle, and particularly when you bring it back to the Chicago Bears. It's not, to me, it's not so much that they are running, you know, some jet sweeps and some different looks and the run pass options, because the run pass options have been around in the NFL for longer than you think. Brett Favre used to run pass options. You know, I mean, it does go back to the days of two tight ends and a fullback as well. But I think the problem for the Bears has been, part, you know, significantly quarterback play, significantly offensive line play, and sometimes running back performance, and even the receiving ability of players not named Allen Robinson have been part of the problem, because Matt Nagy is calling plays where receivers are open, and for a variety of reasons, the ball is not getting to them, and the Bears haven't been able to run the ball effectively. Certainly that has been a problem as well, and some of it can be sort of play calling in terms of game flow and game situation, but it's not the plays themselves that the route concepts on a passing play work. It's just a matter of, in your down and distance situation and when to run the ball and what runs to call and what personnel to have in the game, and trying to get that combination correct in order to have an effective offense. But I don't think it is the system itself as much as it is guys not playing up to their standard in the system and needing to kind of get things back on track, you know, in a lot of different areas. And that falls on Matt Nagy to tweak things and put guys in different positions to be successful and try and mix things up a little bit. But it's not inherently the system, in my opinion. It's sort of how the system is being operated. And I think that's sort of the difference between what the Bears are doing and what the Chiefs are doing and what the Eagles are doing and the Rams and the Ravens. The Rams and Ravens run different offenses than the Andy Reid system, but there's a lot of similar ideas in terms of space and being able to run efficient plays and take advantage of vulnerabilities in opposing defenses, even if the systems do it in different ways. But modern offensive philosophy is changing and developing pretty rapidly, and it's been fun to kind of keep an eye on and see what different offenses are doing, because even the Patriots, they do a lot of the new age things, but they do it with two tight ends and a fullback in the game, so there are different ways of doing it, and I could see the Bears wanting to emulate some of that if they could get production out of their tight ends, but we, you know, this Bears offense is still looking for its identity this season, and you know, we'll be watching to see whether it's Trubisky or Daniel, how this offense continues to come together as the year goes on. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast to keep up with all of our daily Chicago Bears news and analysis, and tune back in on Monday for our recap of the Bears-Saints game for Week 7. I realized that I think on yesterday's podcast I was saying Week 6 in referring to the Bears-Saints game, because the bye week threw me off. It's game number 6, week number 7. The bye week was Week 6, and I apologize for mixing that up, because I think I did it more than a few times, and I did it on Twitter, and that's what alerted me to it in the first place. So I think I've got it straight from here on out, but I appreciate everyone who followed along anyway and wasn't distraught by my mix-up of the weeks. It's that's the problem with the bye week. Nobody likes not having Bears football on television, and it's coming back this week, and we're not going to get mixed up with our weeks anymore. So get ready. Bears football is back, and I know you'll be ready to bear down.